Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
How do I enter into a position that's a lineage, or how do I enter into a position where like I realize that I owe so much to the people before me, and I want deeply to invest in the people after me? And how do I do that through my work, but also how do I do that in my life, you know?
It is a pleasure to honor Mandy Cano Villalobos to the podcast today. Mandy is an interdisciplinary artist whose work spans installation, 2D, performance, and sculpture. Her projects explore ideas of home, memory, and cultural identity. She has exhibited in venues including Bridge Projects in LA, the Maryland Institute College of Art, the Ukrainian Institute of Modern Art, the Museum of New Art in Detroit, among others, and including international exhibitions in Mexico City and Chile. Her work has been reviewed in the New York Times, the Washington Post, Sculpture Magazine, Hyperallergic, and the Chicago Reader, among others, and she is the recipient of a Virginia Center for the Creative Arts Fellowship and has been awarded grants from multiple organizations. Mandy is represented by Moo Gallery in Chicago and Dr. J Art Projects in Berlin. She works in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and Brooklyn, New York. I'm excited to hear more about her life and work. Mandy, it's been a long time coming. Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast.
Yay. Thank you.
Okay, so let's dive right in, Mandy, and have you tell me something about your childhood that you feel like connects to your artist life today. I'm wondering if creativity and art has sort of always been part of your background, or what is kind of the thread that is still persistent there?
Yeah. My mom divorced my father and joined the army and took me with her. So apparently whenever she would like come up the stairs to our apartment, all along the hallway, like our on base, you know, apartment building. Mm-hmm. So all along the hallway, like at knee level, you'd see drawings. So like I decorated the, I made the hallway into our personal gallery. Mm. But then also I remember like when I was probably, I guess I'd be like 11 or 12. We moved to this really old house in Pennsylvania, and I really, wanted like a, you know, 1920s candy store to be in my room. Oh. Like, I turned
like a,
my
like a dress- dime, like penny yeah, candy yeah, yeah. jars and yeah.
Oh yes. So like I would invest my money in purchasing like these oh. jars from like Walmart and like the cheapest, nastiest candy you could find, because apparently that's what people ate in the 1920s.
Like all Were that you a Willy candy. Wonka fan? Where did this
oh, big
come
time.
From? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I always wanted to swim in that chocolate river. But like I completely rearranged my room to be a candy store. And like, I would invite my friends, and I wanted to make like milkshakes, but my mom wouldn't let me like do the blender thing up in yeah. my bedroom. But like, I had an old adding machine. Like I used to collect, well, okay. So I still collect so many like weird, bizarre things. Mm-hmm. And I would just fill my room with that. And now I can't live like that. So I do it through art.
I love that. I love the image of like you creating your own personal candy store in your room. Did you have friends come shop and like collect
yeah,
candy?
Yeah, but they would never buy anything. So they'd be like, well, can I just get it for free? And I'm like, oh, that's not
I
the
guess.
Point.
But that's like, not really what I'm trying to I do know. Here.
Right. So I never made money, but it was yeah.
awesome. Well, I'm sure we'll come back around to having you talk a little bit more about your trajectory as an artist, but I would love for you to share Just a little bit about what your work looks like, some concepts and like themes that drive your work. Maybe talk a little bit about your process, just so folks kind of have your work in mind as we go through the interview.
Yeah. So I'm very process oriented, very repetitious in the way that I go about doing things. I think that a lot of that is stemming from this desire to like engage the present moment. So I'm kind of, I'll like give you some background information and then kind of like describe the book. So my grandmother like died when I was 6 months old. And I never, you know, our lives overlapped for a short period of time, but that idea of like death or like, cause it was a very sudden thing. And so I think that that kind of scarred my mother and her generation, and that's been passed down to my generation. So there's always this like awareness of extreme temporality. Like you never know, you know, when death might happen. Therefore you engage each moment as much as you possibly can. And then also, once my grandmother died, my mother joined the army, and then we just lived in so many different places. But I always understood like Virginia, which is where, you know, my family originally is from. I always wanted to go back there and experience home. And like we would, and even to this day, like we still like a year, at least every other year, to like reunite. But I never got to like spend a large amount of time there because we were always moving. So the desire for home is something that also informs my work. And that I think takes, kind of manifests itself in this idea of like hoarding things. So like, so in order to make a home for myself, you know, I collect stuff and keep stuff and sometimes like bizarre, weird things, but things that basically are no longer valued by a previous owner and that somehow have a history or tell a story. And then I kind of like take those disparate stories and put them all together in material form so that there's this like larger kind of, I guess, sense of time or like former life. And then these things have a new life in their new situation. So what that looks like in terms of artwork is that installation wise, I'll typically do these larger installations in like, I mean, yes, I do them in galleries, but my favorite is to actually like take over a non-art space so that in a way I'm kind of like dialoguing, I guess you could say, with the site in which I'm working. So basically I'm kind of trying to like make sacred this nasty basement or like somebody's garage that's falling apart. So in that way, I want to engage with the personal history of someone that I'm, you know, portraying to a certain extent or looking into like the history of a site and what are the histories of the people who occupied this site and how do I address that through these objects that I'm collecting from all over the place, or sometimes even from participants. So like two examples are, I did a project that addressed the history of an old high school building in Grand Rapids. And it was also post the 1967 riots. There was like white flight and then the neighborhood, you know, quickly shifted demographics and then it became, it wasn't welfare. It was like, I'm trying to think, I want to say human resources, but I know that's
not right. Like a housing authority
it was basically, you know, a community service, oriented organization that served, underprivileged families. So then they moved out and then this organization that I often collaborate with here in Grand Rapids called Site Lab. They're kind of amazing. They just like get invited to take over random spaces, and then do art installations in them. So I looked into the history of, yes, the building, but also of a lot of the area, people, the people like from the neighborhood. And it was amazing because so many of them had like come to Grand Rapids during the Great Migration. And of course, like I've lived throughout the South. So I was specifically interested in interviewing these like older women of color who really like forged the identity of the area. And so what was crazy is I don't really feel like I'm from Grand Rapids just because, you know, I haven't lived here all my life. And so I would say, oh, where are you from? And they'd be like, oh, I'm from Alabama. I was like, oh my gosh, what part? Or like, oh, I'm from Virginia. And, you know, so it's bizarre because like, I have so much in common with these ladies on the basis of like where we've previously lived. And so just to hear their stories, and I've heard some crazy stories about just being some of the first African-American women in the area, some of the first teachers, some of the first students. And and the bizarre thing is like school wasn't segregated here, but like, yeah, it kind of was, you know, just not legally. So just hearing some of their stories and then trying to present those stories in installation form in this site that had actually had connections with some of the first integrated schooling in Grand Rapids, or not integrate, but like, well, that, it's hard. It's very hard for me to like understand no segregation when there's so much that's racially messed up. Anyways, so that was one installation. There were all these like kind of shrines that with little candles and pictures of people. So I reproduced the photographs and kind of went through the history of this neighborhood. Another installation also is like, I'm very much interested in thrones and creating like a home-like space for people. So an installation that I previously worked on looked at the history of a woman who's kind of amazing. She ended up never getting married and adopting a Down syndrome child with a heart condition, then ended up getting artificially inseminated twice. She was a single mother, worked full time, had three kids, and she's like one of the most intelligent people I knew. And so I created this like huge installation in her basement that was kind of an homage to her, using a lot of her photographs and a lot of like her found objects and a lot of fake flowers, et cetera. Sorry, that's like going... I'm like, let me tell you about it.
tell me a little bit about some of the like visual, you know, like what's your visual language? Like what are some of the, you know, kind of cues that you would say that describe like the final product of like what you make? I feel like you've talked a lot about sort of the concepts and like the narratives that like bring, you know, a concept to your forefront, but like what is like your visual language?
My visual language, like? Yeah. Like I would basically say like cluster, like like taking a whole bunch of stuff and in an organized way, you know, making it as tight and put together as possible. So like, I'll take these nasty boxes that may or may not have mold on them and definitely have like spider webs and, you know, dust like deeply embedded in the grain. And then like, I'll just like shove stained rags that are neatly folded into like this nasty little box and try to like compact it as much as possible. And then on top of that, have like, and you know, little figurines all and then like a little picture with a rusty frame, you know, and so it's very neatly packed together, but like you can tell this stuff isn't like pristine in any way. Like it's been used, like the handkerchiefs, you know, had snot in them at one period in time, that kind of thing. but then also like I'll do tapestry. I call them tapestries. I'll do like these fiber pieces where I take plastic bags and like underoos and orphan socks and like Halloween wigs and then some real hair and candy wrappers. And I'll like bind them all together in, again, as compact of a way as possible. So there's this kind of like, I think it's not necessarily fear, but it's a desire to want to like suck the most out of something as possible. Like, again, it's like that idea, like, you're going to die. Okay, mm-hmm. well, if I'm going to die, I can sleep when I'm dead. So mm-hmm. how do I utilize these 24 hours, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's like, how do I take this like scrap of cloth and make the most of it, or this banner, and cover it with as much like.
Is that Magnificat, that body of work that you're talking about?
Well, actually, I was thinking of some of the stuff that I've been doing more recently, but like okay. Magnificat, that's yeah. another thing where I'm just like taking these rags and literally folding them and folding them and folding them and like crushing them together. And then, you know, rubbing all sorts of matte gel medium in between the crevices and then coating them with gold. But it's like, I want to pack as much as possible together because if I don't, like, I'm going to miss something or, you know, like, I don't want to miss anything.
Tell me about the series Penance. I love that work.
So Penance kind of started from my return to painting. So like I took leave of painting for a while, which is ironic because I taught painting. But I was doing a lot of like installation work and like, you know, stitching. And then when I went back to painting, I didn't want to make images and I didn't necessarily want to make a product. I wanted to engage painting or drawing or some sort of two-dimensional thing as a ritual. Mm-hmm. So like I was kind of like done with this idea of like, I want a painting and I want it to match with my couch and I'm mm-hmm. going to buy it and it's going to be a commodity. But instead, like, is there some sort of like spiritual significance to mark making? And so what I began to do is I made a lot of like repetitious marks on pieces of paper that I had like stained in blueberry tea, which was disgusting. Like the actual tea was disgusting. So I had to use it for something else. And then I started to burn things. And that's kind of when Penance, this long series, which I still kind of sort of do, I call it my burning practice. So I just repetitively burn holes into a piece of paper. And that in a way is me trying to elevate the idea of let's make a pretty picture. And instead, like, how do I engage each and every second as it passes? Or how do I take this piece of paper and in a way, like destructively create something or literally like enter into the paper? Like it's kind of the scarification process. So in the end, the entire piece of paper is extraordinarily fragile because like it's half the paper it used to be. Like it's like it's burnt through in so many places. But it's also like this beautiful remnant of a ritual. And that's kind of what I want. I want it to be a relic. I don't want it to be like I don't know if this is going to sound right, but like I don't want it to be a thing. I want it to be the relic of a ritual. You know, I want it to be sacred. I don't want it to just match with the couch.
Right. So, well, and going back to the idea of proclaiming yourself a process-based artist, right? It's about the action and, you know, the experience and the process as much, if not more than, you know, kind of the look or the material quality of the finished thing.
Yeah. But it also like that thing, even that like the relic that I have, like, yes, it is a scarred piece of paper, a burnt piece of paper. Like you see the burns, but also there's like all this time that I've spent with it, touching it. And that I hope gets imbued in the actual like material of the paper itself.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So a lot of the themes that you just brought up in describing your art practice, I feel like translate pretty well to motherhood. And just this idea of sort of time being fleeting and moments being precious and, you know, kind of going back to that idea of like the sudden loss of your grandmother and, you know, just thinking about like your family history and legacy and all of these connections.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah. Right. So I'm like, yes.
Yeah. No, just interrupt me. Go. You can see where I'm leading you.
No, but it's like, so like that. So this is something that I've been thinking a lot about lately, but okay. Yeah. I'm the first of my generation, and my mother is also the first of her generation. And my grandmother, like the fact that our lives got to overlap for 6 months, like that's something that's very significant to me. Right. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I was able to like pop out a kid and that kid was able to overlap with my great grandmother, mm-hmm. like, cause my great grandmother lived forever and ever. Right. And so like a lot of my work is very much, like this, whatever. And like, I realize it's kind of this oxymoron. It's like decentered. So I don't want it to be about me. Like, I hate that idea of like, mm-hmm. oh, the individual artist saving the world in the studio, you know, but instead it's like, how do I enter into a position that's a lineage, or how do I enter into a position where like I realize that I owe so much to the people before me, and I want deeply to invest in the people after me. Mm. And how do I do that through my work, but also how do I do that in my life, you know?
Mm. Okay. After this call, we got to have a studio visit, because I want you to read my most recent artist statement that I just like rewrote about my work, because it's so connected to these ideas. I mostly use textile and, mm-hmm. you know, kind of my like art lineage of abstraction that I like honed in grad school. But just that idea of like the decentering, like this is like, I would say I'm a very like process-based artist like you, but for me, it's not about making the object. It's about mm-hmm. the like activation of the lineage of place of like history and, you know, just the process of like making things with a hand or, mm-hmm.
Right,
you know,
right.
Care, like something being careworn, yes. You know,
because like, think about it. We live in a world where it's like, you want Netflix? We got anything you want. Look it mm-hmm. up right now. Bam, done. Yeah. You know, and then you spend like 3 hours and you're like, what have I done? I just mm-hmm. ate a bag of popcorn and I, you know, like, or like, my kid wants a, you know, Game Boy or whatever they're called now. Oh, $20. Oh, Amazon. Oh, it can be here in 2 days. It's mm-hmm. like, the idea of craft, mm-hmm. of like really spending time doing something. It's like we have so little time. Everything is immediate, you know? Like, I love the delayed gratification. Mm-hmm. Like this, and this is actually a conversation that I had with my 7-year-old today. But like, while he was like screaming at the top of his lungs, I'm like, you get everything you want immediate. Mm-hmm. It's right. Okay to wait. You know, and I almost feel like I make things hard for myself to mm-hmm. prove their worth, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that's that you like, yes.
On the heels of a generation of grandparents who.
Right.
You know, like I feel nothing. Like I do that too, but it's because I've seen like what their lives were like. And I mm-hmm. was raised like understanding, like I was just reading an article about this, how like our generation or like the folks who are kind of living in like mid 30s, 40s, like late 20s, like that kind of like, basically if you grew up knowing the world before there was the internet.
Yeah.
And then the internet came into your life and you saw the transition.
Mm-hmm.
Like our kids don't know that there was always right. Amazon Prime for them, you know,
right.
But like just that connection of like the understanding, like how long things take and not losing that connection to like creation or, you know, manufacturing or like all of these like processes that bring us like objects and bring us food and bring us things we need. Like, I mean, I grew up helping my grandmother like can beans
right,
and
yeah,
gardening
yeah.
and, you know, and
snap peas and
right.
like actually catch a fish.
And now stuff like fish. That is like novelty, you know?
Right.
but just that I would so identify with that, like, concept of if I have to work hard for something, or if it takes a long time, it's immediately like more valuable to me, mm-hmm. because, which I'm not like, I think that can become a shrine in and of itself.
Right.
I'm not saying that's always like an authentic, you know, way to frame things, but it's just really interesting to think about how, I think part of that is because we understood like what, what it was right. like before then, you know,
yeah.
before the internet kind of created everything to move at the speed of light.
Right. Like, I think about that every time that I like do laundry, which happens to be like every day, all day, but like, there's this, like, what if I didn't have a laundry mm-hmm. or a washing machine? Like, mm-hmm. like, would I be scrubbing this stuff down? I don't have time. I ain't got time for that. Mm-hmm. You know, like I love the fact that I can do five things at once mm-hmm. because it's like that idea of the cluster of like trying to cram as much stuff into a single space. But then like, what have we lost?
Right. You know,
right. Like, there's something to be said for sitting on a back porch and like snapping snaps that right. you're going to boil with some like, you know, bacon in it or something. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yes.
Like, I just wish, instead of this like constant awareness that time is running out, instead of me trying to do as much as possible, I could just sit and it would be okay if time runs out, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm. Like, let ourselves be satisfied with time as it is in
yeah.
the moment.
Right. And like, I always feel like I'm trying so hard to grab the moment
mm-hmm.
that like, if I didn't try so hard, like the moment would find me, you know?
Yeah.
Which leads me to parenting. No.
Yeah. So back to, so much good stuff here, Mandy. Back to just the intersection of your art career and motherhood. I'm wondering like what kind of changes like you noticed, or what transformation sort of you went through just as a person, but specifically as an artist when you became a parent?
Yeah. I was afraid, I think, that so many people told me it's okay to take a hiatus. And so many people, like, I even knew one woman who's like, well, I retired from art making. I'll go back to it when my kids are grown. And I'm like, I don't think I could do that even if I tried, you know?
mm-hmm.
And so I just remember like with the first child, we had an ergo and I'd just like sit him in there and, you know, pull out the teta and mm-hmm. he'd just like be nursing away while I, and this is like in the middle of the night, I can't sleep because he's not sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, I may as well just like walk around and sew. And so that's what I literally did. Like, I held the stupid shirt out in front of me and I was like embroidering names into it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I remember thinking like, this sucks. And then I was like, no way, you're badass. You go, girl. You know, like, I'm like, this is amazing. But then like, and I also remember giving birth to children 2 and 3. And it's like, I just brought artwork with me because I knew I was going to be bored like mm-hmm. the day following, you know, giving birth. So
when you
like,
were giving birth, you're like, this is a studio experiment.
I know, right? Well, but that's the other thing. Like, I take stuff with me wherever I go because like, yeah. Because like, I'm going to run out of time and I got to yeah. do something. I can't just wait for something, you know?
Yeah.
So even like writing, like I tried to, so recently I've been like taking a lot of trips to New York and I tried to not do something on the subway. Like, I'm like, it's okay to just sit here and yeah. stare at people, right? And then I'm like, I gotta do, you know, like I get nervous. So I'm like, oh, I gotta sew, you know? So like, I'll just like sit there and pull out my little miniature studio in a bag and, mm-hmm. and just sew stuff. Cause apparently like I can't mm-hmm. not do something. And that's a problem,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Do you think that tendency was more like kind of exaggerated after you became a parent, where there is just like always something, somebody needing your attention.
Yeah.
Could you sit with the present moment more before you had kids?
I think so. Like, let's just say this. Before, like back in the courtship days between my husband and I, you know, like we'd go out and we'd like, you know, go to bars, mm-hmm. and that was, you know, like that was cool. And so I didn't take any sewing then, you know.
Yeah, but what was that about?
Right, I know. But now it's like, we can't afford to go out to bars. Like, let's sew. You know, so I don't know. I don't know, you know. Mm. But I do think, yeah, having kids, it's like there is no rest. Mm-hmm. It's just like, oh, great. I have the laundry going and the dishwasher and I can like, you know, fold clothes while I do this, and you know, like, mm-hmm. like there's just so much happening at the same time, and I feel mm-hmm. like if I'm not like utilizing all that time to make as much, to get as much done as possible, then like I'm lazy or I'm gonna fall behind, or there's like the stress of like, what if it all doesn't get done? Mm-hmm. And that's so that's like a constant struggle for me. Like, it's okay. Mm-hmm. Not to improve. And that's hard for me to accept. Mm-hmm. Like, it's okay. Like, mm-hmm. you're not a failure. And like, it's a, like, leave the dirty dishes. It's going to be okay. You know?
Absolutely. Hi friends, dropping in to share some information about an incredible course I'll be co-teaching with my awesome work partner, Isadora Stowe. Isadora and I have led 3 rounds of the popular course Wearing All the Hats, a professional practices course for artists, and we are offering a new limited time course for the artists in our community. We find that women artists, artists who are caregivers, and artists who are marginalized often struggle with feeling empowered to take up space, time, and resources in their own lives. So Isadora and I have created a 3-week course titled Time, Space, Agency, and Empowerment to give you tools and resources to take up more space in your life, have more agency, and have a stronger voice for your art career. We will investigate the roles of time, space, agency, and empowerment in our lives and do it in a group setting. From that place of knowing, we will create a system that you will be able to continuously be inspired by and build from as you cultivate an empowered life and career as an artist. So if you want to join us in this course or to learn more, please head to the thrivetogethernetwork.com website for full course details. The course will be hosted on the Thrive Together Network, and you can see how to enroll in this course. It's a 3-week course running Wednesday nights from 8 to 9:30 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday, November 2nd, November 9th, and November 16th. We would love to have you join us as we are on this journey of becoming more empowered artists together. Tell me a little bit more about how you kind of tangibly built up your art career. This can be about the intersection of motherhood or not, but just, you know, you talked about like making art while you were nursing and doing different things, but I'm wondering more about sort of life structure. Like, did you always have childcare so you could be in the studio? God. Did you, you know, just kind of what has it been like to try to build your career as an artist, but also be a person in a relationship who's caregiving?
Yeah, that's an amazing question. So, first of all, when I was teaching and like popping out babies, like there, I mean, I would make work, but it was like barely surviving. It was bad work, mm-hmm. like in my personal opinion. It's like I had no creative energy whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't until I stopped teaching that I really feel like my career picked up. But also having said that, Yes, we had and still have, actually my kids are there right now, an amazing community center that also has a daycare attached. And so they go to summer camp now. Like we're like their family mascot. Like we've been there forever, you know, like
they know. How old are your kids?
They, I don't know. They're 10, about to turn 11, 7 and 6, recently turned 6. Yeah. So anyways, like there's amazing daycare. And on top of that, like, I mean, Miss Wanda, who has known all of my children from birth, like just stopped by yesterday to drop off like 20 pounds of hot dogs. Mm. I don't know where she got them, but that's okay. You know, but they're free. It's fine. But then also, oh my gosh, my mom and aunts are amazing. So mm-hmm. like when my mom was in the army, she would literally just like ship me off to California where my two aunts and well, really three, my one aunt was like in and out of jail, but like, and my grandfather, and then also like my dad and then my other aunt in Virginia, like, mm-hmm. So really like the fact that my family came together to raise me mm-hmm. was extraordinarily influential to the point that I actually, to the point where like I have my aunts come here and take care of my kids when I leave, or like mm-hmm. right now my mom is here and my mom will be here for quite some time. So, and my aunt might be coming in September so that I can go to New York and my awesome. Other, you know, so like, yeah. it is really literally like a family, the very tight knit family. And like the women in my family are extraordinarily supportive of me mm-hmm. to the extent that they book their butt from California to Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Yeah.
Yeah. To like bathe my children and take them to school and stuff.
Does your family, like, do they know what you do as an artist, or is it kind of just, oh, yeah. Oh, Mandy needs help, so we'll just go?
No, they know. And, yeah. And I think that that's also, I mean, they're just so supportive of that, which is ironic. Cause like, I remember being in college and saying to my stepdad and my mom, like, oh, I should study English because artists are poor. And I'm like, and an English major is going to like, well, you know, whatever. And my parents were like, no, you really just need to study art. Like,
wow,
that's what you're dedicated to. We can tell you're going to fail in every other arena of life. Just go for it. You know, like then they're like, we'll support you 100%. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, tell me about what's happening in New York. How come you're kind of dividing your time between Michigan and Brooklyn?
So that, okay.
It sounds like a typical artist's conundrum, but I'm always interested in how artists from the Midwest, like I know several other artists right. who have studios in New York or yeah. like, are teaching in New York, and I'm just like, how is that even possible? Right, like right, what yeah. what does that mean?
Right. I know. And I used to hear that too. And I'm like,
what?
Like, how do I make that happen for me? Oh my gosh. All right. So a couple of things. Number one, yeah, I'm not from here. That being the case, like I mostly, you know, grew up on the East Coast, and I think moving to Grand Rapids, I quickly realized that just the infrastructure for the level of a career that I desired was not at my fingertips. Mm. But I also realized that like there's enough, you know, galleries, institutions, and just collectors in particularly centered in New York City that I want, mm-hmm. you know. And so like, thank God I got this grant from the Gottlieb Foundation that has already like yielded so many good things. And part of that is that it pays for me to travel to New York. So I went on a residency in 2016 when I was pregnant with child number 3. And I met a lovely woman there who lives in Williamsburg, which is a neighborhood in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. So we stayed in touch over the course of time. And I also, like, my old college roommate, she's actually now moving to Florida, but like whenever I would come and visit, I'd stay with her, but I'd also make sure to visit Leslie, the mm-hmm. woman I had met at the residency. And so, Leslie and I were talking, and she, she was talking about her basement and how, like, you know, she hated going down there because it was full of stuff. And it was just, you know, she didn't want to deal with it. And I was like, so Leslie, tell me about this basement of yours. I would love to see it. And so, like, we went down there, and it was amazing. I was like, oh my gosh, dream come true. It was like years and years of old suitcases and boxes of letters and wow. like, you know, chunks of broken furniture with elaborate carvings. And I was like, oh my gosh, I want to do an installation down here. And she's like, well, if you clean it up, I'll let you. And I was like, I love you. So yeah, so now that's kind of been, it's slowly turning into my studio. So whenever I go to New York, like, that's, you know, where I stay, because Leslie's amazing and wonderful, and she's letting me use her basement for free.
Wow.
So, right. So, like, I feel so indebted to her, and I'm like, I want to do everything for you. I want to, like, I'll wash your dishes.
I need a Leslie.
I'll paint your house. I know. Right. So yeah, so she's wonderful. She's amazing. And that's, like, now where my studio is.
So you're not making work in Grand Rapids. You're basically.
I am.
Okay.
So, sorry. So I also have another studio here, because okay. I have another amazing friend who also happens to be the executive director of a nonprofit after school kids organization. I'm their artist in residence. So, okay. Hey, I got another basement. Like, so their offices are, like, right across the parking lot from the main building where the program takes place. And their basement is, like, now my studio. And then I do programming with the kids.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Tell me just a little bit more about, like, how you make the New York thing work. Like, just.
Well, I've only been doing it since March.
Okay. So, and what are some of your strategies? Like, when you go there, are you, like, got to have a meeting with a curator, or, like,
oh, yeah.
Like, because totally. I would imagine I feel like if I were in your shoes, I'd be like, I got to maximize the time while I'm there.
Right.
And, like, right. Do all these things. And, like, mm-hmm. I'm just interested to know, like, kind of your strategy for that.
So, like, there are a few people that I do know in New York. And so mm-hmm. I try to reconnect with them every time. And that's wonderful. And it's good to see, you know, see them and talk to them about what's going on in their lives and ask them for professional advice. But then also, and this is, like, the disgruntling, like, somewhat stupid part. Like, I'm like, hi, my name is Mandy Canoviello-Bos, and I really like your gallery for this reason and this reason. And because, like, this is how I sound over email. And then, like, they, you know, and half the time I never hear back. But sometimes, like, there's this wonderful curator from, or not curator. Well, actually, she's more like a writer. She also curates stuff. Neenam Devani from Georgia, like, not the state, and like the country, Georgia. Mm-hmm. Right. So anyways, so she came and we did a studio visit, and she had, like, wonderful things to say. And then hopefully over the course of time, like, people might actually come to my studio and mm-hmm. give me some studio visits. But then also I'll go to friends' shows, and another Georgian, actually, Uta Bakaya, who I had met at a residency in 2019, he was having an exhibition at a gallery, Marissa Newman Project. So I, like, mm-hmm. went to go visit, and we reconnected. And then I got to meet Marissa, who's, like, amazing and wonderful as well. And then, like, we were just, you know, hanging out, and I was like, so if you ever want to do a studio visit, I'm a studio in Brooklyn. And she was like, oh, I don't think I can make it down to Brooklyn, but, like, do you want to do a virtual visit? And I was like, I'll take whatever you give me. Of course I will. You know, so, like, the next day, we only had, like, 30 minutes of time that, like, both of our schedules allowed us to do, like, a virtual visit, even though, like, we're both, right. you know, New York. So, but, like, it went really well. The conversation was great. And then she's like, hey, do you have time tomorrow at 11 to 11:30? And I was like, I do. And so, like, we did another studio visit.
Wow.
And then I did this performance, which, Like I was thinking about this today. I was like, which seems like it was months ago, but surprise, it was 7 days ago, last week. I know, right? Because I've been to Alabama and Virginia since
summer,
then.
Summertime. Yeah. It's, you know, right. Crazy. It's all good. So time warp.
But well, Marissa came to the performance. And then and actually it was the day before she texted me. She's like, hey, you got a few minutes to talk? I was like, sure. And so she's like, I'm thinking about this group show. It would start in October. I was like, sign me up. I want to be in this show. And I'm not going to be in town, but we'll figure it out, you know?
Yeah.
Because residencies, that's all I can tell. Like, if you have an aunt or mother who's willing to come and like live and take care of your children, get thyself to a residency. Like, holy cow. I've met so many amazing people at residencies.
What are some of the residencies you've done?
Oh, wow. Okay. So Stoveworks, yes, you need to go. It's in Chattanooga, Tennessee. You also need to, if you can, go to Art Omi, which is in Omi, New York. They're also amazing. They actually bring up people from New York City, like curators, gallerists, et cetera, critics who come and do studio visits with people because they're only like 2 hours north, and then you get like amazing, you know, catered meals and blah, 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 blah. And they also have a pool, and there's maybe wine with dinner. That was nice. Ragdale is where I met Leslie. That's on the northwest side of Chicago. That's a very swanky residency as well. Where else have I been? I'm trying to think. Post Contemporary, which is in Troy, New York.
I was just in Troy in June.
There you go. Their building is amazing and crazy.
So residencies,
just
keep the connections going, show up in real life to events.
Yes.
Like I feel like,
and don't wait for things to happen. Like go make things happen, because if you wait, like you're going to wait for a long time and ain't nothing going to happen. Hambidge is another residency. That's kind of weird. Like, I mean, not like, it's extraordinarily productive, but you are by yourself in a cabin in the middle of the woods with no internet. You know?
Yes. I have a friend who did that. Coulter Fussell did Hambidge. She was telling us about it this summer. So yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of different residencies for different needs, but sounds like some of the ones that you've really utilized have been ones where there were like kind of connections built in or
Yeah, oh, I just got back from VCCA. That's been good because like there are people that I obviously, you know, will stay in touch with from there. But like, that's the thing. Once you meet people and you have this like connection because you're both not on your own turf, right? And so, and you bond with people and then like you go to their turf, you reconnect with them. And it's just like, you really are creating a community, but the thing that I'm constantly, you know, trying to figure out is like, how do I invest better in this community? Like, I don't want to be like, give me everything you got. Like, what, how can I give back, you know? And it's like, I've got nothing to give. Like, but right. Just a whole bunch of like words. I'll tell you funny stories. And like, wine. But, Mandy, sorry.
No, that's okay. Tell me just a couple more questions before we wrap up. Tell me like one memory of a big moment in your art career where you were like, damn, I just did this. Like really proud.
Yeah. So in 2020, I got this email like totally out of the blue. And it was from somebody at the New York Times who was like, hey, we're going to feature you. I was like,
is this how this works?
I know, right? I'm like, what? Like, they were like, we're going to put you into the top five artists to follow on Instagram now. We need you to send us a high res image. And I'm like,
is this a scam? That would have been my first thought. Like, is this a scam?
I know. I'm like, is this a scam? I know, like, I don't have any money.
No.
But it wasn't a scam. And there was a woman who had actually come to Grand Rapids who had seen my work. And I just like sent her a thank you because she had mentioned it and something. And then she actually wrote an article and had mentioned my work in it. So I was like, thank you again. And she was following me on Instagram, and I was doing like, it was during the lockdown. So really long story short, I took my kids to Alabama and left them there. Yes. I'm that mother. And then emptied out my bedroom and to paint it all white. But I was like, ooh, I've got an all white empty room. I can do stuff. So I made it like a lot of videos and was posting them on Instagram, and she saw it and she included it in the New York Times. Right. And I was like, bucket list. Now I can die. And yes. It'll be great. I got in the New York Times. Yay.
That's awesome. Okay. Tell me like one thing or a couple things that you feel like are kind of just points of struggle. Like what are some things that you just always, like, you can't seem to crack that nut just as an artist?
I know that right now things are going well. They're not always going to go well, but you know, let's ride this out for a while. What sucks is the mom part, because I feel like the crappiest mother all the time, because I'm constantly handing my kids off to somebody else, because I'm constantly working. When am I going to spend time with them? Because they're insane. These are the craziest kids. And I'm kind of glad they're crazy, because it's like, I would never pay attention to them if they weren't constantly yelling at me. But at the same time, like, that is stressful and a half. Like, sometimes I just go to the bathroom to like do computer work. And my mom thinks I have IBS. Like that's how, you know, like I'll like spend 30 minutes in there and children are like reaching under the door, banging on it, screaming my name, mom, that's my name. But like, yeah, I like, why can't I enjoy my kids more? And why can't we do things together? And really like not feel like it's a chore, but like truly deeply enjoy it. Like, what is wrong with me? How hard is that?
Nothing's wrong with you. You're not alone. And
but it's like, why can't I enjoy my children more?
Yeah.
That's what I hate.
Okay. Goals for the next 6 months to a year.
All right. Multiple things. One is to make this installation in New York absolutely amazing and to do private viewings, and hopefully something will lead from that. I'm going to Mexico City in October, where I will have a residency followed by a solo exhibition. And I want that to lead to things as well. Hopefully participation in an art fair that I, you know, have had my eyes on for a while in Mexico. Additionally, I would love to figure out a way, because I have this money from the Gottlieb Foundation, which has been a blessing. At the same time, I don't want it to simply be a one and done. Like, I want to figure out how to best invest this money so that it will lead to a sustainable practice that isn't me sustaining my practice. It's that my practice is sustaining me,
right?
You know, and I don't like, I don't think there's any set way to do that. I think that different people have to figure out what works for them. And I also want to be a good mom. Yay.
Same. Although 6 months, I don't know. I think we gotta work on that.
Let's over watch time. Six yeah. months.
Let's just Amazon cart that, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Circling back to our immediate gratification. Mandy, this has been such a pleasure. Let's close with our final five interview questions just for folks to get to know you a little bit better. Who is your biggest art crush?
I don't have one, except lately. I know, because
it's too hard.
Right. Well, Thomas Lanigan Schmidt is somebody I've been looking at quite a bit. That's all I got for you right now.
Okay.
Glitterlicious.
Favorite place to travel or a dream trip you'd like to go on?
I totally want to go to Spain and Italy.
Mm-hmm. Same. Tell me about a film or a book that has been a big inspiration to you.
I don't have time to read. I really love listening to lectures by Marina Warner, who is a self-proclaimed mythologist. And so she talks a lot about like folk tales and fairy tales and myths and how that plays out in culture, and also how that may at times relate to like gender politics and how they're dynamic stories that have shaped our histories, but they're also ours. So how can we use them to further like shape our own culture by changing them, et cetera.
Those sound really great. Where do you access those?
That would be youtube.com.
YouTube. Wow.
But yeah, she's amazing. Marina Warner. She also has like a sexy British accent and is ridiculously.
Love a British accent.
I know. Who doesn't?
Okay. Favorite meal?
Pizza and beer and a pint of Ben and Jerry's fish food.
Oh my God. That's like one of my favorite ice creams. I love fish food. I always get like whenever I want a little treat, if they don't have Jenny's ice cream, if you've never tried J-E-N-I, it's like a small brand from Ohio, but they carry it in like Target and stuff.
Really?
I will buy Ben and Jerry's fish food. I love that stuff. It's very sweet, very delicious.
Yes.
Okay. And who would you like to give a shout out to who supports you and your work?
Yes, of course, my husband and my three children are amazing. However, my stepfather, the best studio assistant ever, Keith Godwin. My mother, Kelly Godwin. My aunts, Mary and Tina. And my uncle, Kenneth Ray Still. And Constance Marie, because they're like all the people who raised me and are constantly there for me.
I'm so glad you have that support. Where can folks find you? Like, what's your Instagram website? Where do you want people to see your work?
Instagram is Mandy_Cano, C-A-N-O, _ Villalobos, V-I-L-L-A-L-O-B-O-S. and then MandyCano.com.
Awesome. Mandy, thank you so much. This was so fun and I'm feeling very inspired. So appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah. Thank you for letting me talk your ear off.
Of course. The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.